Sometimes you dominate a match for 80 minutes and collapse late. Other times you get played off the pitch for pretty much the whole game and Justin Meerum scores a hat trick. And it's up to us to figure out what the heck happened. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Massive Match Day. My name is Chris Landis. I am back with Nathaniel Marchewka after his brief stint on the injured list. Welcome back, Nate.
It hurt to be away for a week, so I'm happy to be here.
Josh filled in admirably for you. We are sponsored, as always, by the Land Grant Brewing Company and the Old North Arcade. As I record this on Thursday afternoon, it is still Columbus Craft Beer Week for a couple days, so get out to Land Grant or Old North Arcade and enjoy some local brews before they take them all away at the end of the week, or however that works. I don't know. But we've got a lot to talk about, although this show is going to sound kind of familiar since we're playing New England this week. But this past week, we played the Impact up in Montreal, a team we had not faced this year, a team we do not usually do very well playing, especially in Montreal, I should say. And somehow, by the grace of Justin Meerum, we got a win. Really kind of wonky, loopy game. Crew SC come out and take an early two-goal lead, despite pretty much playing behind the eight ball for the entire game. Two goals against the run of play in the first half leave everybody feeling pretty good at halftime. And then all of a sudden things go sideways. All the shots that were flying over for Montreal are now testing the keeper. They're hitting the post. And then they get a couple goals and they look to be pushing for a third when out of nowhere the clouds part and Nico Hansen plays a ball to Justin Meerum for the hat trick. Really weird game. Coach Berhalter this week said he was happy with the result, obviously, some things to work on, but he liked his guys' response to adversity. But, Nate, what are your takeaways from this game?
I think, for the most part, Crew got outplayed. I know it was in Montreal, and like you said, this Crew team does not have a good record against the Impact. I think part of that is due to their generally direct play. But we actually saw something a little bit different this match. We saw their direct play mixed with really good positional play. And Montreal held 60%+ of possession the entire game. And it's really, really rare that we see that against a Berhalter team.
Yeah, the Crew were basically outplayed in every statistical category except for balls finding the back of the net. They were outpossessed, they were outshot, more shots on target, they were outpassed. Pretty much the inverse of everything we've seen at times from Berhalter, where sure, we dominate stat lines but don't get the result. Greg spoke this week of, you know, just the reaction and the never give up attitude. And Justin Meerum really is in the form of his life right now. And it really shows out there on the pitch. He makes other players better around him, which is not something we've necessarily seen from him in the past. He seems to have taken that step from elevating his own game to elevating the team's game. Would you agree? Or just earlier this year, I was arguing that he shouldn't be the team MVP because Higuain is still the guy who makes the team go. But the weeks since then have proven that's not necessarily the case. So I am happy to be proven wrong about that. Justin Meerum also very, very good human, good guy, always a good guy to talk to. And our friend of the podcast, Andrew Erickson, did a fantastic story on Justin Meerum's journey in the Dispatch this week. You guys can check that out online as well. Definitely worth a read. Really good story. You spoke of Impact wingers. There were some stories on the wing that weren't about Justin Meerum this week. Ethan Finley picked up a contusion in the Toronto game, which I did not know about until I saw the match. So that left the door open for free Kakuta Mane. He has been freed. He has been unleashed, if that's the word you want to use. Not a bad performance, but not anything earth-shattering. I think it's kind of what we expected, you know, if you weren't driving the hype train. I'm looking at you, Mr. Sedley. What do you think about Kakuta's performance, Nate? Anything positive or negative that you saw of him?
Well, I would say overall it was kind of uninspiring. He could have had a goal right off the bat in the game. Missed a chance, missed an opportunity. I think it was later in the first half as well, where it was near and on goal. I thought that his movements were really good, though. So while on the ball, maybe I was less impressed with him. And defensively, he looked really poor. And I think that's partly, I'm assuming, why Berhalter has kept him on the sidelines early on in the season, is because defensively, as far as his positioning goes, he seems a little lost. And we saw that in the Montreal match. And they were exploiting him, for sure, down Crew's right-hand side. However, offensively, I thought that his movements were really good, and I thought it opened up a lot of space for the likes of Justin Merrim and Higuain.
You know, that's an interesting point, because a lot of people probably don't realize just how much defensive responsibility is placed on the wingers in the system, and also how that defensive responsibility can vary from system to system. You know, there are very few soccer systems in the world probably where wingers don't have to play any defense. That's probably not a thing too many teams do.
Right.
But what wingers are asked to do defensively can be very different from game to game, from team to team. So I don't think it's necessarily a knock on him to say he hasn't quite gotten it yet, because that's probably the most complicated part of having to learn a new system, particularly for a guy like Berhalter, who's very, very intricate in his tactical plans. I've been to training a couple times. I've seen them working on things, and there is a lot. He's giving each individual player in specific instructions, not just go here, if the guy does this, do this. He's like getting in and really explaining the how and the why of what he's doing. So I don't think it's necessarily a knock on Kakuta Mane to say he hasn't quite grasped some of those intricacies yet. And I don't think that saying he was poor defensively in this first game is necessarily saying he's doomed to forever be poor defensively. I think his effort was there. I think we saw that on both sides of the ball. He wasn't ever just stopping play. He wasn't not running. You know, I didn't see any signs of I don't really care out there. He seemed to be very engaged, even if he wasn't quite getting it. But I saw some real positives. As you alluded to, he had the header right at the keeper. That was offside anyway. He had a couple of chances to make an impact. I was struck offensively by how narrow he was playing. He was cutting inside
right.
a lot, which is something we usually see Justin Merrim do. But unless I'm mistaken, we don't usually see both wingers doing that at the same time.
But we have in recent games. And I think Finley has remarked in comments that having, like, Berhalter having him play on the interior more and having to make those cuts inside has opened up less opportunities for him to create down the wing and to utilize this space. And I think we'll see something similar with Kakuta Mane if Berhalter keeps requiring these wingers on the right-hand side to do that.
And it was interesting to me that we were seeing so much cutting in with Harrison Offal not there. I think
right. If
Harrison Offal's there, it makes a little more sense to you and me because we know what he does going forward. Hector Jimenez, solid player, Swiss Army knife. I was fairly impressed with his performance on Saturday. But he doesn't provide necessarily the same kind of dynamic, incisive passing that a Harrison Offal would. Offal is expected back this week. He is back in training. He looked sharp. So that is a positive for Crew SC. Defensively, the goals that Crew SC conceded, what went wrong?
Well, for the Crew, they were under a lot of pressure. And Montreal was very patient on the ball the entire match. I remember like the opening, I think 15 minutes, like before that the initial Justin Merrim goal. I don't think Montreal had a shot. They ended the game with 24 shots. In the first 15, they did not have a single shot. And I think that shows how patient they were on the ball. They were trying to find a way to break this team down. Once they unlocked that later in the game, and especially as we saw in the second half, they took it to Crew SC. And this defense didn't really know how to handle it. There was a lot of space, particularly between the midfield and the defensive line, right, and the two banks of four in this system. There's a lot of space there that the likes of Piotti, Jackson Hamill were able to exploit. And then also overloads down the wing. We're able to get Caressi's defense pinched in, away from the goal, and open up space inside.
I don't remember if it was the first or the second goal off the top of my head, but Jonathan Mensah had a bit of a rough sequence. Greg Berhalter has spoken this week about being encouraged by how Mensah is fitting into the side, how he's playing. You and I spoke, I believe, last time or two weeks ago now, that we're not necessarily convinced by Mensah and his performances. He's shown flashes of what you would expect. Strong, you know, decisive usually, but then he gets bullied off the ball and turns the ball over, and it leads directly to a goal. Berhalter, I haven't gone back and been able to rewatch it, but Berhalter said there was a foul in that whole thing, which may or may not be the case. I will leave that up to the Twitterverse, the Crooniverse, to correct Greg and I if that is not the case. But it's really unfair to put blame for goals on any one player. But in that sequence, your designated player center back has got to do a little better there, no?
Sure. I totally agree. And I think, unfortunately, with Mensah, I don't think that will change. I think he'll make good plays. He'll make big plays. But he's also going to make a lot of errors at the same time. And some of these errors could be costly. I think that partly this was from his scouting report. I did a scouting report on him. You can read it either on Massive Report or on my own site. I'll put the link up on my Twitter for those of you that follow. But in the initial scouting report that I did and that a lot of, you know, other scouts saw across the world and journalists, when trying to gauge Mensah's potential, Mensah's ability, it's exactly what we saw. We saw that he can make big mistakes. He has moments where he momentarily loses consciousness and you have no idea what he's doing. Times where he's on the ball and just gives it away for a dumb mistake, or loses his man because he's, I don't know, zoning out. I'm not sure. But that's something that I saw for his previous teams, like when he played at Angers, previous to the Crew. We saw that there. When he played in France, it was the same thing. I don't think we'll see that change.
It seems almost absurd to ask this, but do you see Alex Cronale overtaking Jonathan Mensah at some point this season?
This season, I'm not sure. Maybe come playoff time. Season.
Ooh, that's a big call to make in the playoffs, Nate.
Yeah, but this is Berhalter we're talking about.
Fair.
Fair so enough. I feel like that is something that he would do. And I think Cronale, I keep saying his name wrong, will improve as the season goes on. Obviously, he's young. He seems to have a steadier head than Mensah. I think Mensah probably has more, I don't know, technical ability at this point. But Cronale is shown to be more solid. And have we seen Mensah on any Team of the Weeks? I don't think so. How many has Cronale been on? I don't know. And that's up for debate, too. Like, the guys at MLS seem to love Cronale. But what do you think?
I think the guys at MLS love any homegrown player who has any degree of success out the gate, but, you know, can't blame them for that. I'm interested to see if we start seeing more of a back three to kind of try to integrate Alex into the starting lineup without having to sit Jonathan. That wouldn't surprise me, but we've been saying for weeks we expect to see a back three/five, and it seems to come and go as it pleases. Anything else you wanna touch on for the Montreal game before we move on to previewing this week's matchup?
Not really, but I guess as a segue into the New England game is that, you know, Crew allowed 24 shots.
It's a lot of shots.
And 17 of which were inside the box. And that number has stuck
a lot
with
of
me
shots
ever since the game. It's kind of haunted me because that's a lot. And Montreal is not a very clinical team, and New England showed last week against RSL that they can be very clinical. They scored 4 goals in the first half against RSL. They had 13 shots in the entire game. Can't allow that against New England, or else it's going to be, you know, they're going to be right in their own death wish.
Yeah, Crew SC heading up to Patriots country to take on the Revs. Not really a traditional rivalry, but in the Berhalter years with the playoff fiasco a few years back and then the Kamara trade, it's kind of become a bit of a rivalry. As you said, New England coming fresh off waffle stomping RSL's B-plus team last week, 4-0, and looking quite convincing in doing it. But Crew SC recently played them, and was that one we won or lost? I'm totally blanking on this here.
Against the Revs?
Yes.
1-2-0.
That's right. Okay, that was the one we won, and then we collapsed against the other two. For some reason, I was thinking right. I got them flipped. Professionalism here on this podcast. I didn't sleep last night. So, Crew SC beat the Revs here at home, heading out on the road, but one big X factor that was not in Columbus will be in Foxborough, one Mr. Kai Kamara. What does he bring to the table for this Revs team that we didn't see this past matchup in Columbus?
Well, he gives height for them in the box. He gives an aerial presence for their crosses, which this Revs team seems to kind of live by, because as much attacking talent as they have, they for some reason seem to struggle to create with any grace in front of goal. They love their crosses, and having Kamara in the box is going to really, really improve this team. Also, another X factor to add to this, not to totally skip off Kamara, is Chris Tierney. And he's been a staple to this team for years, and his left foot and his crosses in the box matched with Kamara's head is going to be huge. And Tierney didn't play against the Crew. He was out, I think, injured or sick. I think sick, but
yeah.
I don't remember. So Kellen Rowe played in his spot, which was obviously experimental for Rowe. But having Tierney there and having that, you know, solidity at left back is really going to help a lot too.
Yeah, Chris Tierney, kind of one of those under the radar guys for a lot of fans. Quietly, a real vital building block to that Revs team, and that Revs team features a lot of really good technical, creative players. You've got, you know, Diego Fagundes. You've got Lee Wynn. You know, this is not Kai Kamara versus Crew SC, despite right. what some of the fan narrative may want to portray it as. This is a legitimately dangerous New England team, even if they've been kind of inconsistent at times this year.
Yeah, I think they have some of the best attacking talent in the league. And they haven't shown consistency throughout this year. And, you know, we've remarked on this podcast before speculating as to why that is. But I think that this team has the pieces. And once they get together, and they showed that they can do it against RSL. Granted, it was RSL's B team. RSL played with three, maybe four, like, starters. Besides that, these were, you know, substitutes and reserve players that were playing against the Revs. And it was one of the worst matches I've seen in MLS in recent time. So, despite that, and the team had four goals in the first half, and if nothing else, that's a confidence booster for New England, something that I think they've needed this season. So they're going to come into this game pretty hot, and we're going to see how Crew can defend against them.
And you know, that it really, for Crew fans, the big win for New England came really at the worst time, because, like you said, confidence booster, but look at who was doing the damage. Fagundes got his first goal of the year. Kamara right. got back on the score sheet. Lee Wynn got a goal and a couple of assists, I believe. These are the big players getting the points, to use a hockey term. You don't want to see that if you're Crew SC, because you want them to be struggling. So this is a worrisome match for me. This is a match that, as much as I felt like, you know, Crew SC could go to Montreal and potentially get something, which they ended up doing, I don't have a ton of faith in this one. And it's not really because I think Crew are going to play poorly. I just worry that New England have the right weapons to
sure.
match up against Crew's deficiencies, and those weapons seem to be starting to fire together. out of all the players we just named, the Tyrannies, the Wins, the Fagundeses, Kai Kamara, what is the key matchup? Who should be the focus, and how does Crew SC address it?
I think actually Lee Wynn should be the key focus. And we're not sure if he's going to play on the forward line with Kamara or if we're going to see Agudelo up there with Kamara. But
I didn't even mention Agudelo. There's Juan Agudelo, another legitimate goal-scoring threat.
Sure, and he was on the bench against RSL, which is, you know, kind of crazy. But Wynn has shown that he can do really well playing up top and playing almost as a second forward, I guess. He kind of moves all over the field. You're not really sure where he plays. It's like if Higuain were to play forward, I suppose. But he creates a lot, and his movements open up a lot of space. So how Crew combats that as a team, because Crew's not going to man mark him. I don't think we've really ever seen Berhalter deploy a man-marking system or even a partial man-marking system.
Let me stop you here. Is that because we've lacked the personnel to do so? I think with the combination of Artur and Trapp, that might be an option now. I've not seen any evidence of that at practice, sure. But then again, I wouldn't. That's not something they would do in the open portion. Do you think that it's a possibility now, or is it just not in Berhalter's DNA?
I don't think it's in Berhalter's DNA, and I don't see him wavering from that anytime soon.
Okay, so it's not necessarily that, because with the Chani Trapp midfield, say that three times fast, you didn't really have a guy who had, I don't want to say the skill set, but the versatility to man mark someone and still get into the game offensively. I think with Artur and with Will Trapp's, you know, step forward this year in offense, I think you might have that now. So it's something I'm really interested to see, and I'm glad you brought that up. Anyway, not going to man mark. Continue your thought.
Yeah, so how this team defends against the likes of Lee Wynn cutting between the lines is going to be really crucial. He gave the team a lot of havoc in the first match against them this season. And, you know, what's the team going to do? They need to close that midfield and defensive line that Montreal was able to exploit and able to get two goals out of, and a ton of shots. That needs to be cleaned up. And, you know, when the center backs step out, you know, Mensah and Nico Nice, they stepped out probably at the wrong times against Montreal. And maybe they weren't sure to. And maybe the midfield wasn't dropping back to cover, you know, these in-the-hole players at times. So that really needs to be communicated, and this team really needs to be on the same page that New England's going to look to get between the lines, and once they do that, they're going to send it out wide and whip in crosses.
So, I mean, you kind of laid it out right there. It's going to be a communication thing and an organization thing, which I think it's fair to say Crew SC have either been really good at when you look at the games against Orlando or the first game against New England, or they've been really poor at. So it's kind of which Crew SC defense will show up. Offensively, I don't believe Ethan Finley will be back this week. I believe Greg said it's unlikely. I was at training a couple days ago. There was no training today. The injury report does not come out till tonight. Assuming Finley does not go, who do you expect to see on that wing? Do you see Kakuta Mane? Do you see Nico Hansen? Or do you see a formation change?
I want to see a formation change, especially against this Revs team. I don't think it's going to happen. So I really think that we will see Nico Hansen for a few reasons. One, he's shown to be pretty solid this year. Again, like Mane, hasn't been as effective as Finley defensively, but like you said, those may just be learning and growing pains to Berhalter's very technical system. But Hansen has been more productive, and after all, he did get that assist on the Marim goal.
And it should point out, Nico Hansen has shown a lot of recovery effort. I remember in one of the matches, he made some giant, like, 40-yard run from midfield to get back to the box and tackle the ball away. I believe it was against Chicago. I don't even remember who was it against. All the games are blurring together at this point. But do you how big of a loss is Ethan Finley? You know, we've talked about it, coming into the season, there were questions, you know, Miram spot. You know, it was spots were up for grabs. Miram has obviously no one's taken Miram's place on that left wing. Ethan Finley's spot for the last couple years with Cedric and now with Hansen and Mane has kind of always been under threat, but it's always come back to him. And I think it's because, as you said, his defensive effort and just effort in general. How big of a loss for Crew SC is Ethan Finley being unavailable, assuming that's what happens?
Well, I think that he is the more complete winger out of the three mentioned, right? Out of Mane and Hansen. I think he's the most complete, and I think defensively he's going to be the most solid. He's the one most familiar with the system. And I think having his, you know, veteran status, you know, I say veteran, I mean, he is older than both of them, but veteran in the sense that he's used to the system, used to playing with these guys. I think not having that and not having that defensive solidity is going to hurt, even though, you know, maybe you could argue that Mane and Hansen have shown that they have more potential to be more effective offensively. I think that the defensive end needs to be looked at first.
How much do you think the kind of regression back to the mean that Finley experienced in the year following his, he had a career year a couple years ago, got on the national team, got a big money contract, so naturally expectations were high. That you know, people expected him to push on, and now it's looking more like that was kind of a career year and kind of the ceiling. How much do you think perception of him and his play and what he brings to the team has been negatively impacted by that? Because I feel like even though his numbers haven't been at that high level, he's still consistently put in solid to above average performances pretty much across the board. And, you know, in a league like MLS, that's nothing to sneeze at. I think a lot of the perception of him has been negatively impacted because he had his career year and then has kind of gone back to being a good player. And I think that's kind of unfair on him. And I never thought I'd be defending Ethan Finley, but some of the vitriol I see spewed at him online in particular just astounds me, because this guy has shown that he's an impact player when he's on his top level.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And I think that there is a question of, okay, is it a regression to the mean, right? Is that 1 year, season and a half, an outlier? Or are there other factors, right? Injuries, Berhalter system changes, the introduction of Harrison Offal that I've mentioned before. Yeah. I think that since Offals came into the play, Finley's, you know, perceived form and perceived effectiveness, and I say that because we're talking numbers here, goals and assists, right? Those have decreased. Now, I think there is an argument, you know, in the world of soccer is, are these numbers everything, right? Because soccer doesn't give you second assists, right? Soccer stats don't show, right? If you make a run and clear the center back out of the way, and that allows your deep running midfielder in, you know, one-on-one with the keeper, right? There's, like, really no, like, compliment given to the person that makes those runs, right? So there's a lot that numbers can't show, and that's, I guess, partly what I've tried to do with my new, you know, type of analysis that we do here in the league. But I think that Finley has been effective, just in different ways. And I'm just not sure if he can continue to be a numbers player with both the likes of Offal and how Berhalter likes to dictate and control his play. Because I think Finley likes to be a free winger, right? For those that play like FM, like, you know, Romdelier, right? Where he makes those runs.
How you say that forward. Word? I never knew how to say that word.
I think so. We're going with that, Chris. We're just going to stick to it. I have no idea. Just pretend I'm right.
Send hate tweets to Glory to Columbus on Twitter.
Yes. Correct my French. It's been a long time. It's been since high school. So, but no, I think that, you know, having that freedom to make the runs and make the plays when he wants is very important to his style of play. And I think that Berhalter's system really limits that. And, you know, maybe that's a question for him is, you know, is this team the right fit for him? I'm not knocking Finley. I'm not knocking Berhalter. I'm just, it's kind of similar to the Chani thing. It's like, I don't know if the two can work together in a perfect mold anymore.
You know, because Greg's system was fairly consistent for the first couple years of his tenure, I think people have it in their heads, and rightfully so, I guess, that it's kind of this monolithic, dead thing, that this is what it is, it's set in stone. And I think this year, more than anything, has shown that that is not true.
True.
The Greg Berhalter system here has shown that it is a growing, evolving thing, and Tony Chani was left in the wake of that. And I'm not necessarily on board with your idea that Ethan Finley might be another victim of that. I think he still has a lot to offer, but it's certainly something to consider, and it's something we will keep an eye on here for you at Massive Match Day. Anything else you want to touch on in the New England matchup this weekend before we get to predictions?
Not particularly. I just hope that, you know, Chrissy comes out here and plays very disciplined and cleans some things up defensively. And also offensively, they need to start creating better chances. I know this team has scored a lot of goals this season, but if we look at the goals scored, not all of them are that convincing. Against Montreal, yes, Justin Marin had a hat trick, and no, I'm not going to take that away from him. But if you look at the first two goals, those were from huge errors from Montreal's defense that we'll say in most games don't happen once, and it really, really ever happened twice.
On the other side of that coin, though, it says something to Miram in particular's ability to convert those chances, because those half chances, as they call them, you know, that you're not expecting to fall to you, you have a split second to react, and then it passes you by. So, yeah, you want to see higher quality chances. You know, don't bust out the XG on me, but you want to see those higher quality chances. But the fact that Crew SC are netting some of these half chances and making them count,
yeah,
you know, we've talked about it before. Good teams can win when they don't play well. Good teams can win ugly. And I don't know if we've necessarily seen enough consistency to put Crew SC in that top tier of teams in MLS, or at least the East, but they're in the conversation because, you know, they're getting it done sometimes. If they start turning some of these collapses late into, you know, slightly better results, if they can finish the ones they're supposed to finish, we're looking at a team that could be competitive for the East. So it's maddening for us as fans and analysts, because it's just, you don't know.
Sure.
You don't know what you're going to get. And Greg hasn't come out and said as much, but they know. These are smart soccer people. They know that consistency has not necessarily been there. So I don't have high hopes for this week. I'm a little concerned about the form that New England might be finding, coming off a really big result for them, Crew SC. I'm interested to see if the extra day off for Crew SC makes any sort of difference. That can kind of throw guys sometimes, the playing on Sunday, which is not something Crew SC have had to do very often this year, or not at all this year.
I don't think
but,
at all,
you know,
yeah.
3 and 8 days and then a week and an extra day before your next match, that rhythm might be thrown off, but it could give them, you know, a little refresher in the legs. So all that being said, I don't have high hopes for this one. I see a bad night for the Crew. I see it going 3-1 to the bad guys, New England.
Well, that's worse than I have it. I see this one level at 2 apiece.
Really?
Yeah. Well, this team did show that they can, A, put up 2 goals against the Revs, sure, it was at home. And this Revs team can certainly put goals in, especially at home. So I see them certainly scoring 2 against the Crew. Whether or not Crew get 2 or 1, I'm not sure, but I'm going to go with 2.
Who scores first?
New England.
New England. All right. All right. Well, that will do it for us this week here at Massive Match Day. We'd once again like to thank our sponsors, the Land Grant Brewing Company over in Franklinton and Old North Arcade on High Street in Old North, right down there by the University District. Head on down to them. They are a great place to take in any Crew away match or home match if you can't make it out to the fray. Landgrand just announced a new partnership with the Crew. They're going to be doing some really cool merch that I'm hoping they hear this and save me some of. You guys know who loves you, right? Thank you for everyone for listening. You can tweet at us at Massive Report. I am at Chris Landis, K-R-I-S-L-A-N-D-I-S. He is at Glory to Columbus. For Nathaniel Marhefka, I'm Chris Landis. Thank you guys for listening. Good luck to the Crew SC this weekend, and stay massive, everybody.